Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On this 100th anniversary year of the passage of the 19th Amendment, we've been looking at the role of women in maintaining our democracy. It's part of a series we call Keep It 100.
Hey, you gotta keep it 100. Hey, you gotta keep it 100. All right.
That role is front and center in my next guest documentary called And She Could Be Next. The two-night special profiles a slate of women of color who, during 2018-19, were seeking office. Stacey Abrams for the governor of Georgia, Rashida Tlaib for representative in Michigan, Lucy McBath for representative in Georgia, Veronica Escobar for representative in Texas, and Maria Alonzo Durazo for California state senator, and Bushra Amwala, who ran for county commissioner in Skokie, Illinois. She lost, but was elected to the school board in 2019. The film also looks at the activists and organizers who are responsible for the ground game for each candidate and for groups trying to make sure voters' rights are protected. And She Could Be Next is a two-part documentary airing tonight and tomorrow night at 9 on PBS. And I am happy to welcome writer-director Grace Lee. Hi, Grace.
Hi.
And writer and director Marjan Safina. Welcome, Marjan.
Hi.
So you both have experience making films that explore identity and gender and politics, and this film takes on all three plus the survival of democracy. So there's a lot in this movie. Grace, how did you know where to start?
Wow, that's a good question. I think, you know, just sort of, you know, being a part of the world, sort of looking around us and seeing how demographics are changing in this country, you know, how movements and politics are part of our everyday lives, you know, but really, you know, I've always been interested in politics, but 2016 really, you know, sort of made this mark on all of us, and we were looking to find a way to explore, you know, how women of color in particular were transforming politics through the movement.
So, Marjan, the story goes when you first shot this film, some people said to you that it was too focused on women of color and they wanted the film to branch out and then they'd maybe consider it. You know, when you were sitting in those meetings, what was the reason given that made you just roll your eyes?
I roll my eyes on a shockingly often basis. you know, is this, who's going to find this interesting? Is this really a smaller story, which is a piece of the much bigger story about women in general? I think there's often the people who we are pitching to in these rooms are not women of color. In fact, I think we had the luxury of pitching one woman of color in all the pitching that we did. And so I think there's a lack of an understanding that there's actually a massive audience of people who are really hungry to see, you know, themselves represented on screens, but represented in power and defiance and really the sort of joy and their labor. And that's what we knew that because we are that audience ourselves, you know. Mm-hmm. And so... but I think that when you are kind of a woman of color yourself and you're working in a field like this, you get quickly accustomed to, you know, okay, next, you didn't get it, let's move on to the next. And public television, you know, always gets it. So we're really happy to land there.
Marjan, the film is executive produced by Ava DuVernay. What did her support allow you to do? How did it help you make a better film?
I mean, Ava's, when we talk about the empowerment of women of color, right, or the changing the script about what's possible, Ava is sort of synonymous with that idea. So for us, it was very clear that she was very aligned with what we were trying to do, aside from just in the film, but the stand we were trying to take. She definitely was able to help us with access and general support because she has, you know, a bit of an empire of her own. But she's really coming into her own now as we're trying to really get the word out. And she's raising the Ava Army. And the Ava Army are exactly these people that I mentioned earlier, an audience of people who is hungry to see a different version of the narratives about who they are and the place that they take in our society.
So, Grace, some of the women in your film, they're household names now, but they weren't necessarily then. How did you decide upon whom to focus?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you watch the film, you see that we have, you know, diversity was really important on every level of this project. You know, we have not only geographic diversity, racial and ethnic diversity, diversity in age, experience, faith. It was really important for us to, you know, sort of show the world as we see it. You know, it was, they weren't household names, but in my, actually, I had come across Rashida Tlaib many years ago while working on another project. So I was already impressed by her back then when she was a state rep in Michigan. But everybody else, you know, was just the usual process of, you know, research, talking, you know, to people who, you know, would recommend others to us, talking to them directly, you know, understanding that they kind of met the ideas that we were talking about when we talk about a movement of women of color. You know, none of the women that we followed woke up, you know, after the 2016 election and realized that they needed to do something, get off the sidelines, you know, to defend their communities. They were already doing it. They were already rooted in their own communities, working on issues related to immigration, gun violence, Islamophobia, you know, all of the things. So, you know, it was a long process, but it wasn't hard to sort of narrow down once we figured out, you know, how each of these women represented some of these issues that, you know, kind of keep us up at night.
My guests are Grace Lee and Marjan Safina. We're talking about their film, And She Could Be Next, which airs on PBS tonight and tomorrow. Marjan, you know, it's interesting. Did you purposely pick women who had sort of one very specific issue that their campaign and that they were truly passionate about, whether it be Lucy McBath and gun violence and Stacey Abrams and voter suppression? Was that intentional?
I mean, it was intentional in the sense that it was really important to us to, this wasn't a story about individual candidates, right? This it really is the story of a movement buried inside this very interesting moment we're in this country, right? So the demographic shift, the last, you know, the political landscape over the last number of years. So yes, it was intentional in that we wanted to have a way to come to look at the issues, the ones that fill our headlines, but to look at them from the on-the-ground perspective, which these women embody, as Grace just said. But also, at the same time, none of these women are one-issue people. And I think that a tendency that we can kind of often fall into is to not see women of color as whole people, right? Not to see all the aspects of who they are. So, you know, when you look at like a woman like Rashida Tlaib and you look at the kind of headlines that Rashida Tlaib generates, you see nothing of the warm, loving mother. She's, you know, she lights up every room she walks in. She's beloved by the people that she serves. So we wanted, you know, yes, their issues were important, but also it was equally important to really reveal, you know, whole people, because it matters that we see and understand women of color differently.
Grace, you...
I would also add that...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Can I just add one thing?
Of course.
I mean, not only do they not represent single issues, they also don't represent single constituencies. You know, like, I think people might tend to think, oh, she's a Black woman or she's an Arab American woman. Her district is purely Arab American. But, you know, in the case of Rashida, her district is predominantly African American, right? And each one of these women have to speak to like the diversity of the communities in which they live, and that is not a single, you know, constituency.
You also spotlight the women working behind the scenes, organizing, campaigning, raising money for the candidates they support. Marjan, what were their main reasons for getting involved? What did they tell you?
I mean, life, right? We are living in a very kind of divided, unequal playing field landscape. And the reason that these candidates that we followed have found success is because they share lived experiences with the actual day-to-day struggles that folks are facing. And so they sort of they're a very different breed of politician, right? They are authentic in a way that connects with people. And the reason that people were getting involved is A, because everybody has had enough of a system that excludes them and doesn't see what their struggles are, but B, because it really is profoundly exciting when for the first time in your life you get to see someone who really reflects you in a position of power, you know, in sort of at a podium. There's so much power that is, you know, in the imagery of politics, and to see someone that looks like you and has walked in your shoes taking that position is profoundly exciting. And I think that that's the connective tissue, right, is that our democracy doesn't reflect so many people in it, and those people often don't vote because they don't feel seen. And so, you know, it's a recipe that has, you know, several key ingredients, each of which is equally important.
Let's take a listen to a clip from the film And She Could Be Next. It's a two-part series on PBS, airing tonight and tomorrow at 9 p.m. This is Ense Ufa, Executive Director of the New Georgia Project, with then-gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams. And she talks about how she began working with Abrams and her initial reaction to Abrams' plan to register 1 million eligible African-American, Latinx, and Asian voters, Asian-American voters. Let's listen.
I was introduced to Stacey Abrams by a mutual friend to talk about her vision for Georgia and what the possibilities were with, you know, at the time we were looking at 1 million unregistered but eligible African Americans, Latinos, and Asian Americans, and unmarried single white women. You know, she laid out a plan for how to register them all and figure out how to get them sort of all active and engaged and informed. And at the time I was like, oh, that's adorable. Like, I'm from here, right? I understand Southern politics. I understand Georgia. And what you're proposing is crazy. They would never let you do it. And then that kicked off a months-long sort of series of conversations about, like, fighting for the Georgia that we know is possible.
So, Grace, first of all, I like your music in the film quite a bit. Grace, what did you observe? It's really interesting to hear her talking about sort of these intractable, what seem to be intractable problems, clearly much of it from systemic racism. How did you observe the women in this film over the course of this film and watching these volunteers? How did you observe them making change? Like, what were some of the things they were doing that really had an impact?
Yeah, I mean, with the organizers in particular, I mean, I think they're really the unsung heroes. They're the folks that are just like us, right? Like, not many of us are going to run for office and, you know, have the desire to, you know, mount a political campaign, you know, raise money, all of that stuff. But the people who are on the ground, like living in the communities, who, you know that policies like on the local, state, and federal level affect them, these are the folks who are really committed, right? You know, when we were in Georgia, we saw the folks that Nancy was talking about, Latinx, Asian American, Black American organizers, and they really were just, you know, becoming the organizers in their own community. I mean, they are the ones who saw, you know, for example, well, here's an example, with the Asian Americans. You know, so many times, you know, politics campaigns don't, you know, reach out to people who they perceive not to be, you know, high propensity voters, right? But, you know, these, you know, mostly youngish volunteers who were bilingual, were able to speak to their communities in a language that they understood, you know, who understood kind of the cultural barriers to voting. They were really the ones, you know, getting out there and, you know, like making the change themselves. And that was really inspiring. I think that's something that, you know, oftentimes, like, you know, the party doesn't really pay attention to, because we think we need to, you know, reach out to, like, you know, rural voters who, you know, are middle of the road and might vote a certain way, rather than really, you know, looking to the folks who have been ignored for so many years by people who think that they don't have a interest or, you know, even inclination to vote.
Actually, I'd like to add on to that very briefly. You know, the part of the problem is that when you just come after a voter at voting time, you sort of diminish that person's value to you to just, are you going to show up and vote, right? But what these organizers do, the ones who are rooted in community, is they are there as a political home for these populations all year round. What they're trying to do is they're trying to build power. And building power, yes, includes voting, but also includes all the other ways that it's important to plug into sort of living a civic life, right? And I think that one of the things that the traditional kind of campaigns and parties, as Grace said, where they miss the boat is they just show up, you know, when it's time to vote. And that doesn't really make you feel seen or valued, right? Whereas when somebody is there year-round knocking on doors that literally people are like, I've lived here 50 years, I've never had someone knock on my door. That's the difference. That's what the organizers who are on the ground know how to do.
My guests are Grace Lee and Marjan Safina. We're talking about their film, And She Could Be Next, which follows several women of color who are running for office. I want to talk about the youngest person in the film, Bushra Amwala. She turns 20 during the course of the campaign. She was running for county commissioner in Skokie. What did you observe about the way her age affected her perspective on politics and why she got involved in running for office?
what will it reveal about my age to say that, you know, she's not jaded? I mean, Bushra, you know, basically sort of sees a problem and wants to fix it. I mean, there's this scene in the film where, you know, she's in a minivan, like transporting a bunch of her fellow, you know, 20-year-olds to go canvass for her. And she just can't believe that, you know, there's been, you know, the county commission, you know, has everybody is over a certain age, 50 plus, have been there for years. There's barely any women. She just can't believe it because she hasn't grown up in that world. And, you know, like that freshness and that ability to, you know, she's somebody who her whole life represents intersectionality, right? She's the daughter of immigrants. She's a Midwesterner. She's Muslim. She's Asian. She's Pakistani. All of these things. She's a college student. She's Gen Z, right? All of those parts of her identity inform who she is and how she's going to see the world and how she's going to tackle it. And that was really exciting.
You know, there was a moment in the film, and I don't know if this is something you observed in it, where she was talking about she made a video and someone commented on her lipstick color. Mm. And Rashida Tlaib talked about, you know, how hard it was for her to ask for money. And she's sort of the opposite of shy. And she suggests, you know, most women have a hard time asking for money. What were some of these sort of cultural hurdles you saw these women have to navigate? Even these strong women who, you know, maybe sometimes we internalize what we've been, you know, we've seen around us. Marjan, what did you see? What are some of those subtle cultural hurdles that these women candidates had to navigate?
Well, I mean, I think in the first instance, it's a woman thing, right? I mean, there's plenty of data across plenty of industries which show a lack of faith in handing over kind of, you know, big dollars to women. In our own industry, in the film industry, there's a massive drop-off of the number of women directors as the budgets get bigger, right? So that's just one example. So first, it's a woman thing. And then layered on top of that, when you're a woman of color, you know, it adds even more sort of questions about your capabilities. And I think that when you decide to run for office, the first money in is from the people that you can reach with a call, right? And culturally, you know, in some cultures, that's just not a thing. It's just not a thing to, it's unseemly to ask for money. Maybe the people that you can reach with a call don't have, you know, the ability to write you a $20,000 check, you know. But it's at every level. I mean, I think that what we're trying to show in the totality of this project is there's a whole, you're constantly swimming against the current, right? And yet they persist. And yet they remain defiant. And we need, you know, the first wave have come through. The second wave hopefully is going to come through, you know, in November this year. And as there are more of us, doing it, you know, standing at those podiums, then it becomes easier for everyone behind. So I think that every one of these women, yes, wanted to kind of win her own race, but also really understood the profound opportunity to push open the gate for all the women who look like her who want to come behind.
I want to follow up with that. Mary Elena Durazo is running for state senate in California, and she focused a lot on labor and protection of immigrant workers in California. One of the things she talked about in the film was the importance of giving people opportunities in her campaign. Let's take a listen.
I've worked on many, many campaigns, but the day-to-day, how do you produce lists? How do you decide priorities on precincts? How do you move from here through there? That sort of stuff, I really never learned. So I really needed someone who knew how to do the real nitty-gritty of a campaign. And Veronica had that.
Everything here is done, but let's partner everything up with their folders, with their even and their odds.
It goes also to what I believe we should be doing as more experienced leaders, and that is you always give up opportunity to someone even though they've never done it. She's never done, played that role before. So, but if she's got what it takes, why not open the door and let her do it?
So, Grace, why do you think that mindset and that willingness to give someone else a chance was so important to Mary Elena Durazo?
Well, I mean, I think it's all about opportunity, you know? I mean, if you're, you know, coming from a situation like Mary Elena, she grew up as a migrant farm laborer, right? And has sort of moved her own life through the ranks in terms of becoming an organizer, you know, being a lawyer, you know, becoming the head of a powerful union. You know, she sees directly what it means when somebody feels empowered, what Marge was saying earlier about feeling seen for the first time. You know, just because you come from a background that, you know, you're not a millionaire, you didn't go to college or all of these things, there's still opportunities to, you know, organize your own communities and make a difference. I think Mary Elena sees that and has lived that. And I think, you know, so many women of color have come through because of opportunities from other women of color, you know? I mean, my own ability to make documentaries comes from being mentored by other women of color. So, you know, I think it's you know, the title, And She Could Be Next, is also referring back to, you know, the ones who are allowing us to be next, right?
The name of the film is And She Could Be Next. It's airing tonight and tomorrow night at 9 p.m. on PBS. I've been speaking with its directors, Grace Lee and Marjan Safina. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.